You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Heat have canceled practice over the last 2 days, and we're still a few hours away from Game 7 in the other semifinal series between the Toronto Raptors and Boston Celtics, so we're not quite sure who the Miami Heat will be facing in the Eastern Conference Finals, but basketball has gone on. There are still discussions about the team, and there's still a lot going on around the NBA, so lots of things to get into today, but I wanted to start off with the most recent episode of the Low Post podcast, of course, starring Zach Lowe. If you haven't heard it, it is a Miami Heat-based podcast. It starts off with a segment between Lowe and Dan Lambertard, of course, who is a local columnist for the Miami Herald and now has his national show on ESPN. I'm sure you're all familiar with Lambertard's work, and if you're not, shame on you. But the first segment on the Low Post podcast was with Lambertard, and they got into a lot of different things regarding the Heat, regarding Heat culture, how Miami is perceived from the outside world. But there were a few takeaways from there that I thought were worth pointing out on this show. I think the most important one was the recruiting of Kevin Durant back in 2016, when things worked out a little differently for the Heat. They went after Kevin Durant. They were one of five teams to secure a meeting with Durant when he was a free agent. Of course, we all know how that turned out. He wound up joining the Golden State Warriors and winning two championships there before eventually signing with the Brooklyn Nets. But one of the things that Lambertard mentioned was that Durant was very impressed with the vision of the Miami Heat front office between Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and Annie Ellisberg and Andy Simon, and everything that they pitched about Heat culture. The terminology that Lambertard used was that he was, quote, super, super intrigued by what the Miami Heat had to offer. And one of the things that he explained was that they sold Durant a vision of what it was like for him to play potentially for the Heat, that the game was too difficult for him in Oklahoma City between the changes to the coaching staff. Of course, Billy Donovan, who was just recently decided not to rejoin that team through a lengthy rebuild, pairing alongside Russell Westbrook and everything else that was going on. They sold Durant an idea that the game could be made easier for him, that he was too good, that he might even be better than LeBron James. And that was pretty impressive. That kind of stood out to me as far as that was a pretty bold statement from the Heat front office, especially 2 years after LeBron had already left the Miami Heat and was on the cusp of winning his own championship. But either way, it was very interesting to hear Lambertard explain that they had sold this image to Durant. And of course, Durant heard everything that the Heat front office was saying. They listened to the coaching staff, and he realized, you're right, it is too difficult for me in Oklahoma City, which is why he left and ultimately decided to join the team where it would be far, far easier, which is the Golden State Warriors. And that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. Look, Durant is a very complicated personality. If you haven't read the book Boomtown, which kind of details the eventual breakup of the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2012, but it's a fascinating story that it shows the history of the city kind of paralleled by the assembly of the Oklahoma City Thunder and that pairing of Durant and Westbrook and of course James Harden, who was eventually traded to the Rockets. But it shows a very complicated personality when it comes to Durant, the way he thinks about things. And of course, we've seen the burner accounts, we've seen all the talk and the way he addresses media. I don't think Durant ever quite knows exactly what he wants. I think he wants the burden of being the best player on the team, which is why he was somewhat upset that Steph Curry would continue to be viewed by Golden State fans as the team's best player. At the same time, he doesn't want any of the attention that comes with being one of the best players in the game. He doesn't like being compared to LeBron James and saying that he is worse than LeBron, but at the same time, he doesn't want the attention that LeBron gets. And I don't know that you can have it both ways. So it's very interesting to think about what Durant goes through when he makes these decision processes. And of course, he eventually wind up going to the Warriors after spurning the Heat, but he was impressed, and I think that makes a big difference when you talk to other free agents, other players around the league, is that you have a clear vision in Miami that is not available elsewhere. You're going to have an understanding of what happens, why it's happening, etc. And of course, we also saw some of his current thought-making process in when his decision to go to Brooklyn, where he recently, I think, said that he didn't want the attention of going to New York. He didn't want the Mecca and all that BS that comes with the attention of playing for the Knicks, which is why he wanted to go to Brooklyn, where it was a lot more low-key and he can still compete for a title, maybe, although it seems less likely that they're going to win anytime soon. Between the two personalities of him and Kyrie Irving, it's very, very interesting. Lebatard also mentioned that Tyler Hero just totally impressed Pat Riley. That while they don't do a lot when it comes to the draft, they were so enamored with Tyler Hero because of his shooting that they have a specific shooting drill that they have developed over the years that every player who has gone through Miami's system has had to take part of this shooting drill, whether you're a big man or not. And one of the things that stood out about Hero was that he was a better shooter in this particular drill than Ray Allen, better than Devin Booker, etc. That's pretty impressive. And what do you think about that? And the Booker comparison also came up in that Miami believes internally that he can be better than Booker. Booker is still known mostly as a scorer. I think he's a little underrated as a playmaker. And somehow they view that Hero, and we've seen evidence of this over his rookie season, can continue to be a better player, a better all-around player than Booker is. I think the next step in his development is probably more shot creation for others, continuing to develop that playmaking side. We've seen it come, I think, leaps and bounds over the past season. So he, considering his age, considering his lack of NBA experience, and that he's already made those steps in the right direction, I think it's likely that he could be better as a playmaker. I'm not sure if his ceiling as a scorer will eventually match what Booker does. And a lot of that has to do with the team assembled around him, is that Booker can't afford to take X number of shots per game in order to get those averages to where they are. Whereas Hero, more than likely, at least during his rookie contract, will not be the team's go-to scorer. That's going to be other players on this roster. So it's going to be interesting to see how his career pans out. And this is going to be a discussion that we're going to have in the next few years, assuming, of course, that they don't trade Hero for Donovan Mitchell or Bradley Beal or another established superstar, which I'm not sure is as likely or as obvious a decision as it once was. You know, if you're giving up a whole heck of a lot in order to acquire Donovan Mitchell, which certainly makes a lot of sense because Mitchell is an established superstar, is Hero plus X player plus X draft picks worth it, considering that, again, internally, Hero is viewed as a superstar in this team? I'm not so sure anymore. It's one thing to say that about a 19-year-old rookie, you know, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, that was kind of a fun scorer, a guy who had a nice dribble and maybe doesn't have another level, or you can't see what that other level might be, but he puts in the work, and that's something that appeals so much to this Heat front office that I think they really do view him as a centerpiece in the future. So that's interesting to consider. Now, lastly, you know, there was some talk there about Pat Riley and how he's gone through the past couple of seasons dealing with some mediocrity, something that he's not satisfied. And Lebatard, interestingly enough, called Riley very greedy in that he wants success. He continuously wants more and more success, that he's not even satisfied with this version of this team that has gone to the Eastern Conference Finals, despite the fact that they've defied all the odds and all the naysayers in order to achieve this, that anything short of a championship, which you will continue to build more championships for the future, is something that Riley always wants. So I think we knew that already following this market and this team as closely as we do, that Riley's certainly always going to put championships above everything else. But at the same time, I didn't realize it was what drove him so completely. That single-minded pursuit of the championship above all else, I didn't see that as being the defining factor here. Like, it's one thing to not tank. It's one thing to not let go of the rope and all the other Spoisms and Riley-isms that have come down over the past 25 years since he joined the franchise. But at the same time, I didn't realize that you were willing to give up everything just for the sake of a championship. Maybe I'm naive in that sense. But either way, one of the things that really stood out from the Lebatard interview, is that Riley was referring to Hassan Whiteside and Dion Waiters with some vitriol as he was walking through a hallway in the Heat front offices where they have pictures of players on the wall, and they had one of Hassan and Dion on there, and he kind of just looked and just spat, and I guess disgust is probably the best way of describing it. And he said, quote, "our so-called leaders," again, very vitriolically, very angrily, with some levels of disgust there. And I think he was just Very disappointed. The thing was, and this was what came across to me anyway, maybe I'm interpreting things, but Le Batard gave snippets of insight into what it was like for Pat Riley. I will add a little bit more nuance, not being there, not knowing Riley to the same level that Le Batard does. I think Riley was disappointed that both Whiteside and Waiters were paid as well as they did, and they did not take the leaps that he expected them to, that he feels somewhat betrayed by the fact that he did give those that money to those two players, and they never took the next step in their development. They never took accountability for what they were supposed to be. But that ultimately falls on Riley. And I think that's something that most people in his position probably don't acknowledge, is that he made the mistake in the first place. If he wanted it to go differently, and I understand there's a lot going on here. You could spend hours debating whether or not he should have paid those two players. But between Dwayne leaving in 2016, the need to kind of show people around the league after LeBron had spurned Miami very publicly, I think it was important to show, look, we take care of our own, and that's what you're going to come to Miami for. As you're a free agent, even if you're a guy who's looking to add another level to your career or add a boost or restart a career that may have been stuck in the mud for a bit, look at Dion, look at Hassan, etc., this is the place for it. And so you have to show, at least publicly, that we take care of our players by awarding them with money, which is the bottom line for almost every player in the league, if not every player in the league. And so those decisions made sense, but he also may have gone a little overboard and overpaying guys like Hassan and Dion, James Johnson, etc. And I don't like the way that the narrative has shaped over the years, is that we have to hate those players for not being championship contenders, not pushing this team to a championship contender team. I've already talked about Dion at length. Hassan, I've always had more of an issue with Hassan because I think his effort was a lot more questionable than Dion's ever was. Dion had established injury issues, and Riley and that team probably viewed those as lethargic nature of Dion, that he was more just unwilling to take another level in his development. I don't see it that way, and that's not what I've heard from people close to Dion, so that's a whole other conversation. But I just wanted to get into that podcast a little bit, and one of the things that Le Batard spoke about. But he also talked to Duncan Robinson, which was a very fascinating conversation. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's wrong with the national attention on Miami and Eric Spoelstra and how he ranks among the coaches left in the playoff race. But first, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about DoorDash, because DoorDash wants you to continue safely supporting the restaurants in your community, because there are thousands of them that are open for delivery right now and need your patronage more than ever. So support your local restaurants on DoorDash. Ordering is easy. You can just open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with DoorDash's new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. It's the app that brings you the food you're craving right now, right to your door. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. I'll be continuing to cover every game in the Orlando bubble as Miami makes their improbable run to a championship. Can't believe those are the words coming out of my mouth, but at the same time, it's been a great ride. And a big part of that ride has been Duncan Robinson, whose journey just continues to amaze me. One of the things that I think he's getting a lot of attention, and deservedly so. Look, he struggled in the playoffs. We all know that from covering this team, from watching it play out as much as possible. I think the national narrative is a little bit less nuanced because they don't see the team as often as closely as we do. And that's just fair. We don't know the nuances of what's going on in Denver or Los Angeles or Boston, etc. You have to keep that kind of open perspective whenever you talk about another team that you're not as familiar with as closely as you are with the team that you cover or follow as a fan. And one of the things that Robinson, you know, lately we've seen some stories about Robinson, one piece from Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, fascinating story, went into a lot of details. And even though, you know, he's been on this podcast and I've talked to him a number of times, you don't hear all of those details. And she did a phenomenal job of covering Robinson, talking to his friends, and getting some insight into what's made his journey to the NBA possible, that he wasn't even a star NBA player. I'm sorry, a star high school player, that he wasn't a star collegiate player, et cetera, et cetera. There's so much to consider. The offshoot of that is that he's very tall. He's got a hell of a good shooting stroke, but he's put in incredible amounts of work. And I just found so much of what he said to Lowe fascinating. And from that piece from Ramona, very, very great insight. And he's always been very, very clear about expressing parts of his journey, what he thinks during that thought, that process. He's very, very frank and open about it in a way that most NBA players are not comfortable being. And so I think that's really great to talk to a guy like Duncan, because he is so open, because he is so clear. And look, he I think one of the things that really stood out to me from that piece from Shelburne was that he suffers from something, you know, that we could probably all understand to some degree, imposter syndrome, that here he is, a 6'7"-ish white guy from the New England area that was never a star, and now all of a sudden he is expected to be an offensive fulcrum for a title-contending team. That is a hell of a journey when you think about it. There are two sides of that, or there are many, many sides probably, but at least you could break it down to two sides. Is that one, he's gone to this point because he is that good, because he's earned the right to get to this point. But he's also had to work extremely hard to get here. And that's something that kind of gets overlooked or not talked about to the same degree. But it's also a weird place to be in. I think everybody can do the kind of work that they do or put in the effort in whatever their respective trade might be, and you want to get recognized for it. It's still a whole other level to be recognized as one of the 450 best players in the world to do it. Or the 450 best of whatever it is that you do in that particular field. And so I think it's a hard level. It was very interesting to see how Robinson was frank about that imposter syndrome, that he still deals with confidence issues. And it kind of came across to me, look, in a conversation we had after we recorded our podcast, Duncan kind of revealed, look, you know, he does have some confidence issues that he's still kind of working through. It's kind of weird for him, again, to look around and say, I am the player that I am on this team, and I am an important part of this team. But he's also, and he made it clear, he has some confidence. You don't get to the NBA without being extremely confident in your ability. You are one of the 450 best players in the world for a reason. You know that. You're not going to go to your local YMCA and get showed up by, you know, a 35-year-old guy who works in finance, you know, and is a part-time basketball player. That's just not that's not realistic. You get to this level because you're confident, because you have game, and you have to continue to go out and prove it. So I think Duncan's journey continues to be a fascinating one for me. He's still very much an everyman, though, and that came across not just in Shelburne's piece, but also in his interview with Zach Lowe. He does not get recognized around Miami, which is really fascinating to me. I mean, obviously, I know who Robinson is. I can't imagine him going to restaurants around Wynwood or Miami Beach. And he talked about a specific place that he went to, where Ramona Shelburne, where he went there, and she was like, "Well, are you sure? Should we find seating away from people, etc.?" He's like, "No, don't worry about it." And he you know, he's white. He's tallish. He kind of says if he doesn't stand up straight, maybe he can pass like at 6'5". So people come up to him and say, "Oh, well, you're about 6'4", et cetera. Kind of funny to consider that Duncan Robinson, one of the best shooters in NBA history, can just walk into any restaurant around Miami and not get recognized. Anybody listening to this podcast would probably not would not fail to recognize who Duncan is. But he drives a Jeep that is leased by, or was leased by, his mom. That was pretty interesting. One of the tidbits that came out in that interview with Ramona Shelburne. He also told a pretty interesting story about buying a Louis Vuitton bag where he was with former Heat player Ryan Anderson, who was in town. They went shopping because apparently he was dragging some old University of Michigan bag with him when he was going on the road. And Anderson took him shopping and said, "Look, you know what? You got to get a new bag. I'm going to take you someplace to get a new fancy bag because you're in the NBA now. You got money. You can afford it." So he took him to some store, picked out a Louis Vuitton bag, brought it back to his hotel room his apartment, and just kind of left it there. And didn't really feel comfortable taking it out because that's just not who he is right now. And so eventually he asked his sister to go return it on his behalf. Really funny stuff. And Duncan, he's such a hilarious person. And I really enjoy talking to him and hearing him open up about things like that, because he does, again, show a lot more, not depth, he's much more willing to show the other sides of his personality than your average NBA player. So I have to appreciate that as a reporter that has talked to him, and hopefully will continue to do so in the future. Some other takeaways from that interview, Jimmy Butler, Myers Leonard, and Goran Dragic are kind of the inner circle of partiers on the Miami Heat franchise. It was interesting to hear that there's a little bar that they go to and that they've celebrated their run to the Eastern Conference Finals by going out there, that Jimmy and Myers are both big country music fans, as we all know, that they bring the portable speakers out there, start blasting some country music, and then Goran joins in the drinking. I would not have picked that trio out of anything, but it's pretty interesting. And then the kind of other players go and trickle in and out, as it were. He also mentioned that the Heat players, and I find this really fascinating, pick their own defensive assignments, that in conversations with the team internally amongst players, with Spoelstra, who is obviously a big part of that as well, they form a consensus, which is how Jay Crowder wound up covering Giannis Antetokounmpo for most of the time. And that was very, very interesting to me, is that they kind of just talk about it, and it makes a lot of sense. There is a open level of communication on this team that I don't think we see from other groups out there. And maybe it's just Duncan being able to peel back the curtain and let us know this is what happens within the Heat structure. But I don't think we've ever heard from other players on other teams that this is what happens. And I found that incredibly fascinating to think that, you know, now we're looking at a potential matchup with the Boston Celtics. Let's say, who picks up Kemba Walker? You know, do we expose Goran Dragic as a team and say, you know, Goran, you can't really stay with Kemba. You need to do a better job defending him. Maybe Jay should start off on Kemba, and then maybe you can pick up Jason Tatum or Marcus Smart, who's not that kind of a threat offensively, etc. Interesting stuff. So we just know now that the defensive assignments are discussed internally as a team, and that's how they come up with these decisions. Duncan was also asked by Zach Lowe whether or not other players have talked to him and said, you know, I can't play for the Heat, you know, so much about Heat culture and the work, etc. And Duncan kind of played it down. He said players have told him something to that effect, but he's very understanding of how the image of Heat culture comes across, and these were his words, that's almost crazy, but in fact it's just really about diligence, accountability, making sure that everybody knows where to be. He talked about the body fat testing, that's something that still goes on pretty regularly, and that it holds everybody in check, that even when they made those midseason acquisitions of Crowder and Iguodala, they put everybody's body fat levels up on the board, because you kind of, it's a way of keeping everybody in line and making sure that you're all on the same page, that when you make a move like this, it's about one goal, which is ultimately to find a way to win. And the best way of doing that is by being in as great shape as possible. So that was pretty interesting. He also talked a little bit about that accountability. If he makes a mistake on the floor, that the players kind of talk to each other and say, you know, you got to do a better job of that. You got to do something differently. And we've heard from Josh Richardson, a former Heat player now in Philadelphia, that there was a lack of accountability with the Philadelphia 76ers that led to their eventual outing in the NBA playoffs. And I think we're starting to see a lot more of that maybe there just isn't that kind of level of communication amongst players, that it could bristle a lot of players. It might set people off because you have this clash of personalities. And whereas in Miami, everybody understands their role, and it's okay for Jimmy Butler to come up to Duncan and say, man, you got to go and do something differently. You got to defend better. You got to do a better job of defending, et cetera, et cetera. That to me is very, very interesting, that there's this level of accountability and communication. He also talked about changes to the rotation, that when Bam was inserted into the starting lineup, they talked about it as a group, that Spo sat there with his players and said, look, I think the best thing moving forward is that I need to take Kendrick and Myers out of that starting lineup and insert X player, because Kendrick's not at 100% because of the COVID, that Myers might be a little too slow at this point to guard with some of the bigs that we're going to be facing during the playoffs potentially, and that everybody kind of tosses their idea around, that ultimately Spo has the final say, but that he gets the input of his players. Look, this is definitely not something that you see around the league. You hear all sorts of machinations from coaches like Mark Jackson and Jason Kidd that want to destroy a player's confidence in many ways to help promote other players. I've mentioned this before, and I apologize for that, but if you haven't heard it, welcome to something that I think has really shaped a lot of my perception about leadership, which is that somebody told me that there are two types of leaders. One that wants to build things organically, that wants to build things together with you by bringing you together and having everybody kind of step up and rise to the challenge that way. And others who want to lead by breaking things apart and seeing who rises. And while there is an element of inserting chaos or making people feel uncomfortable, it doesn't have to be underhanded. It doesn't have to be Machiavellian. And I think that's something that, again, Jackson and Kidd and others around the league don't understand. It's okay to kind of push you out of your comfort zone. In fact, it's very necessary in many ways. But at the same time, you want to be able to build organically and say, look, we're working towards something. I have your best interest at heart. And one of the ways that that comes across is by having open lines of communications. Players around the league will say, look, if you're going to, and this is about their coaches that lead them as far as their teams and things of that sort, if you're going to make a decision about my playing time, which affects my money, at least tell it to my effing face. Have the guts to look me in the eye and say, look, I'm cutting your minutes and this is what's going to happen. And I don't think that happens nearly enough around the league, but it's nice to hear that Miami is a lot more willing to have those discussions, especially when the playoffs and the championship are online. So I think that shows another level to Eric Spoelstra and his willingness to be frank and open with his players. He also talked a little bit about how Spo has helped Duncan gain some of that confidence, that he made his own story about becoming a head coach and having to deal with a big three, that it kind of revealed his own feelings of imposter syndrome and how he was able to get past that, and how he recognized that for Duncan to take another level of his development, he'd have to eventually get past that. When his esteem level matches his talent level, then he'll finally become the player that he's supposed to be. And I think that was a very interesting thing. And one of the things that shows why Eric Spoelstra might be one of the best coaches in the league. It's an amazing story from Ramona Shelburne, a great podcast from Zach Lowe. So you should definitely check both of those out. I don't recommend that you check out other podcasts often, but that's a very, very good one. But it also, again, shows another level to Eric Spoelstra, which is something that we'll talk about if he's the best coach left in the playoffs. But one of the things that you're definitely sure of is that Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. There are 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones that you totally have to check out, from caramel to coconut almond, German chocolate, peanut butter, banana bread, apple almond crisp, so many delicious flavors. And they're all covered in 100% chocolate. The bars are soft, easy to choose. They're delicious, and they're good for you too. They're great for the health conscious person. If you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, the bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for all sorts of different diets. They have got all the nutrients that you're looking for. And best of all, right now, if you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your next order. Again, go to builtbar.com, get $10 off your next order of Locked On. I love them. My family loves them. They're such a great snack that we all like to indulge in every once in a while, or just tide us over in between meals when we're on the go and busy with lots of things. Again, I've told you before, I've got a toddler. Don't always have the kind of time to be able to prepare a meal, but I can grab a Built Bar and just makes my life so much easier. It keeps me going, keeps me feeling energized and ready to go. So go to builtbar.com, get $10 off your next order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. My DMs are always open to everybody, so please feel free to send in questions, concerns, comments, whatever you might like. A couple points here before I wrap up the show. Paul Pierce making some news around Heat Twitter by saying the Heat haven't been tested yet. He doesn't expect him to move out of the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think we all want to hate on that because it's Paul Pierce and he deserves a lot of our hatred. But at the same time, he's echoing something that I said in my most recent podcast, is that I do have concerns about Miami not being tested. They faced a bad Indiana team that was missing key players. They were facing a Milwaukee team that they were specifically built for to blow up, and they were also facing a team without Giannis Antetokounmpo for at least a couple of those games. That made them more dangerous in some regards, but it was a different team. So while we're quick to say, oh, this was the best team in the NBA with the best record, they were the one seed, etc., it's not, I don't think it's necessarily proof of the Heat being tested. And I think look, you talk to the Heat players. Jimmy Butler said this. He knows that they have another level to reach. He knows that they can be better. Maybe that's not the same thing as saying that they haven't been tested, but I think it's a fair assessment. I don't buy into it as much as Paul does. I think Pierce wants to kind of just diss on Miami whenever possible because, well, that's just Paul Pierce. At the same time, I understand what he's trying to say. Miami has had perhaps an easier path than many would have expected. If they had gone through an Indiana team at full strength and a Milwaukee team at full strength, maybe that conversation is a little different. That wasn't the case, so I understand. There's a lot of attention on Miami, and it's very unusual to see the Heat back in prominence again. And a lot of the discussion is that they've made this incredible transformation, that they've had a one-year turnaround, etc. Now, they have changed a lot of their roster, but I don't think the roster over the last couple of seasons was as bad. And I see a lot of people on Heat Twitter making that same kind of... I'm not sure what to call it, but you kind of, oh, if you made it through this lineup or if you made it through the mediocrity of the last few years, I don't buy into that. Look, they were a couple games away last year from being a playoff team. They've been to the playoffs enough. They were 41-41 and a half game out of a playoff spot. A lot of people, and I think there was a quote from a recent piece by Brian Windhorst that, you know, you look at this team and they have missed the playoffs three times in the last 5 years. Yeah, absolutely. And they also lost their best player in Chris Bosh to a life-threatening disease. He was out and in and out of the lineup for the next three seasons. That was a big factor. They were also incorporating two new rookies. They also lost their franchise's best player in Dwayne Wade in 2016. They were half game out one season. They were a game out just last year in Dwayne's last season. So I think that's overstating. This was a team that was really in playoff contention for the last 5 years, whether you want to recognize it or not. Since the departure of LeBron James, they've always been a playoff team. That they weren't built perhaps for a deeper playoff run, you could argue that, and I think that's a fair point. I don't think they were ever as bad as people projected. I know that there were issues with the salary cap. I know that Zach Lowe himself made that statement that this team was had one of the bleakest futures around the league. I could understand that perspective. As Heat fans, I think a lot of you are very defensive of protecting your team. I absolutely get that. I also don't think you necessarily have to trash what happened over the last 5 years to accept that this team is a very, very good one. And that's where I'm at right now. This team, this run has been fascinating. It's been great. It's been so much damn fun to cover that team, to see the camaraderie in that locker room, to see them interact with each other as players, to see the support, the pieces all fitting together. It's worked so well. And this team is, to me, very, very enjoyable to watch. The way they play, the way they move the ball, the way they shoot it, the way they defend. One of the best teams. Comparable, I think, to the Big Three era. Maybe that's overstating things a little bit. Maybe that's recency bias. I think I have a nuanced enough perspective to see this team and the way they've played over the last season. Seeing them every game for the last year. I think you can appreciate that this team is a very, very good one without having to necessarily trash what happened over the last few seasons. But the big point here that I wanted to make in this segment, somebody tweeted out, where does Eric Spoelstra rank versus Brad Stevens? Is Spo the better coach? It was somebody along the national lines. I can't recall now who it was. Stevens gets a lot of recognition for being a hell of a good coach. But I think Eric Spoelstra is a better coach. And I think that's pretty fair. It's not just what he's accomplished, because those arguments are futile. You know, Eric has done a lot with a great talent, and that's the argument against him. He's like, well, you had LeBron James, etc. It's like, well, you can't win a championship without a superstar player. Maybe this year is the first year that he'll be able to do that. And at the same time, people will argue, well, yeah, but you had Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, two all-stars. It's like, well, okay. So if you move the goalposts like that, you're never going to accept what Eric Spoelstra has been able to do. But look, Spoelstra with two championships, four runs to the NBA Finals. Who ranks up against what he's been able to accomplish and the way that he's been able to accomplish? Are the other coaches still left in the bubble as great a communicator as Spoelstra is? And look, Spoelstra has his faults. Every coach does. But when you look at Stevens, when you look at Nick Nurse, who's a great innovator and seems like a fun person to play for, when you look at Rivers, Doc is... I think as much as he's beloved, he's also as disliked by some players around the league. He is not everybody's cup of tea. Mike D'Antoni, limited to some degrees, maybe a brilliant mind regarding his offense and the kind of freedom that he allows players to enjoy. Not as great a planner as everybody makes him out to be. Frank Vogel, a very good coach who's somewhat, he's appeared at times over his head on in Indiana and Orlando. I always liked him as a person. I think he's very personable and friendly. I don't know that necessarily makes him for the great coach. And Michael Malone, similarly. I think they're all very good coaches. You don't get to this point without being a very good coach. Well, maybe Jim Boylan, notwithstanding. But these seven remaining coaches are all very, very good. I have to say that Eric Spoelstra is probably the best among them. Not just for his ability to communicate, but his ability to make the decisions, to bond with high-level players like LeBron and Dwayne and Chris Bosh, but also to reach out to players like Duncan Robinson that are just finding their footing here. And I think every coach has to do this to some degree. Some do it more than others, but Eric just does a very, very good job of being able to reach everybody, communicate with everybody, get everybody on the same page, and that's just an extension of the Heat culture and everything else. And look, to what Duncan was saying in his podcast appearance with Zach Lowe, it's about diligence. It's about understanding your role, doing what you can, and being accountable for when you don't reach the level that you're supposed to, when you don't do your job as part of a bigger structure, because we need all these cogs to fit together. Maybe that's a very simplistic approach to viewing a people, an assemblage of human beings, but at the same time, you kind of need to be focused on something bigger in order to achieve that goal, and that goal is always, again, to win a championship. So I just find it very, very interesting. Experience matters. His calming presence, which I talked about in the last show, is a huge factor. I think the fact that he's been there and seen so many different things really, really stands out. D'Antoni has never been at the championship level. Vogel, neither. Malone, obviously not. And while Nurse has won a title, Doc Rivers has. Eric Spoelstra has won too. And I think that really makes a difference. And the fact that he did it the way he has really stands out. I shouldn't have to knock the other coaches in the bubble, but I can also recognize objectively that Eric Spoelstra is probably the best among them. So we'll continue talking a little bit more about the NBA playoffs. Hopefully in the next 24 hours, we'll know who Miami is facing. And that should be a fun Eastern Conference Finals. It's going to be a great run. Thanks so much for listening. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your time.